I will be forever the myth.
You're the king of kings, though.
There's always a pecking order. The little peckers never mess with the big peckers. So I'm a rooster, and he's a chicken, so to speak.
This episode of the Bodybuilding Legends podcast is brought to you by our sponsors, Old School Labs and Florida Alternative Medicine. All right, welcome everybody to another episode of the Bodybuilding Legends podcast. This is our first show, I think, of the new year. So happy new year, 2020. New year, new decade. And I am fighting a cold, unfortunately, but getting better. Should be better another day or two, but my voice sounds a little cracked. That's why. Anyways, on today's show, to start off the new year, I thought we would have our anniversary show. We've been promising this since last summer, and I finally got a chance to put it together. So today is going to be part one of this. We'll probably run it like two or three parts because this is actually our 2.5 years. We started on July 4th, 2017. Yes, we are now in 2.5 years of broadcasting the Bodybuilding Legends podcast. So we got a lot of old shows to go over, and I picked some really good ones today. Today we're going to hear from Jerry Branum, where he talks about the 1966 Mr. Olympia. And he was there as a teenager watching the show in Brooklyn, New York. And, of course, he saw Larry Scott win his second Olympia over Harold Poole, so he's got some stories about that. We're also going to hear from Phil Williams, one of my favorite guests. Phil talks about his relationship with George Turner and also some of the guys that he knew in the sport, including Ray Mentzer and Gunnar Rosbaum. John DeFendis, we'll hear from him. John, one of the most intense trainers ever. He used to train with Steve Mihalik, who was a totally insane trainer. So he's going to talk about his relationship with Steve Mihalik. And then following that, we're also going to hear from Joey Folco's interview, where he also talks about Mihalik and Mr. America's Gym. Then we're going to go to Manuel Perry, where Manuel is going to talk about going to Gold's Gym for the very first time and what it was like to train with Robbie. And then Steve Davis is going to be also on the show, and he's going to talk about what it was like to train with Frank Zane back in 1977 when Frank won his very first Mr. Olympia. But before we get to that, I want to talk about Old School Labs. And I have been with Old School Labs for several years now. This is the supplement company that draws on the wisdom of the golden era of fitness and bodybuilding to offer unique supplements for the discerning athlete. Old School Labs is the only brand that I use, trust, and associate my name with. It's the brand I used to win the Natural Mr. Universe in 2012. You may have heard of their award-winning fat burner called Vintage Burn, which is the world's first muscle-preserving fat burner, or Vintage Blast, which is their two-stage pre-workout, or Vintage Brawn, which is the triple protein isolate powerhouse. It's packed with eggs, milk, and beef protein. Their products have no proprietary blends, no artificial flavors, colors, or sweeteners. Old School Labs is also the home of 1983 Mr. Olympia Samir Banute and bodybuilding legend Tom Platz. So use the discount code LEGENDS12 and you will get 12% off your order when you go to oldschoollabs.com. Old School Labs, supplements that make sense. All right, and we did get some emails, so I want to go over those emails that we got from last week. Let's see, we had some emails about the 1979 show. I got a really nice email here from Rich Fitter. We talked about the 1979 review that we did with Jerry Branum. He said, "Hey, John, thank you for an outstanding look back at the year I discovered bodybuilding and for bringing back some very fond memories. A week before the show aired, I lost my sister suddenly and unexpectedly. She was the only remaining family member from my youth, as I lost my brother and both parents this past decade. Listening to your show reminded me of Christmas 1979, when I received my first set of weights and bought my first bodybuilding magazine, which featured many of the bodybuilders that you and Jerry discussed. My family was always supportive of my bodybuilding, and every Christmas after that one was full of bodybuilding-related presents and stockings, stuff with amino acids and awful-tasting liquid protein. I treasure those memories now more than ever. Your show made me smile during a very sad time, so thank you for this Christmas gift. All the best, Rich Fitter." Wow, great letter, Rich. Thank you for sending that to me, and I'm glad that our show made a little bit of a difference to you during the holiday season. I know the holiday season can get tough for a lot of people, so I'm glad that made a difference for you. And thank you for listening to the show again. Terry Strand also made a comment on the Facebook page. He said, "In 1979, Frank started employing negative reps. Previously, he'd done only positive reps. Old dogs can still learn." And on our Bodybuilding Legends show page on Facebook, Tim Mendoza said, "Hey, John, you plan to get Bill Grant back anytime soon? Man, he's funny. We've become friends now in his travels over the past year. Great guy." Yeah, Bill is a great guy. I'd love to have him back on the show. And on my Facebook page, Rich Fitter made a comment. He said, "This was my favorite show so far. Well done, John." Sergio Moshia said, "The great Bertel Fox." Eric Burke said, "Great show. Always love Jerry's stories." Russell B. said, "John Hansen, great. Jerry has a lot of interesting ideas as well as his historical knowledge. It sounds like 79 was an important year or a peak for the sport in some ways. Then we had 2 years of Olympia controversy, apart from any other political stuff going on behind the scenes and interfederation, etc." Pete Pingle said, "Great show, John. Me being a huge Frank Zane fan, I really enjoyed hearing about the Olympia that year." And Nika Christiani said, "Wow, amazing. Jerry Branum is my mentor." And then in our 1989 review, I also got some comments. Russell B. said, "What a fantastic bunch of winners." Vince Taylor, the Vince Taylor, said, "I love it. Great post, John Hansen. The mindset of winning my first pro show recalled by Jerry at the 5-minute time mark. Wow, just awesome." Wow, great to hear from Vince Taylor. Thanks for making a comment, Vince. Troy Moore said, "The best of times in bodybuilding, the athletes, the people, the era." And Tim Mendoza said, "Fitting interview to close out the year, John. Epic stuff." So thank you to you guys for writing those emails. If you guys want to send me an email, just email me at naturalolympia@gmail.com, and I will get it and I will read it on the air. I always appreciate hearing your comments. We also got a couple more reviews on the Apple podcast. So if you guys listen to the show on Apple Podcasts, please leave a customer review. It really helps us out. So if you could do that, I'd really appreciate it. We got a 4.6 out of 5 right now. It looks like we got one star, and maybe a couple 2 stars. So we got to get more 5 stars. Hardcore 35 said, "I found this podcast about 6 months ago, and I went back to listen to every episode. I've been keeping up ever since. John knows his stuff, and I love hearing all the great stories." Old York guy, just on the first of the year, 1-1-20-220-2020. Old York guy just made a comment on the first of the year, January 1st, 2020. He said, "I look forward to John's podcast each and every week. He has a nice array of interesting guests, and he's a great interviewer." So, yeah, if you listen to the podcast on Apple Podcasts, please leave us a review there if you could, or at least rate the show. I'd really appreciate it. All right, and I also want to mention, of course, my John Hansen Fitness Challenge, which is over on my new website, johnhansenfitness.com. I'm doing a challenge. It's going to be a 12-week program, so to get you into the best shape of your life. So you have to submit your entry form by January 15th. So just go to johnhansenfitness.com, go to the top of the page where it says Fitness Challenge, and just click on that and you'll get all the details. Basically, what I'm doing is I'm setting up a training and diet program for you for 12 weeks for 3 months for only a cost of $300. Normally that would be $900, but I'm doing it for 1/3 the price just to get people into this contest. And I will follow you every week. I'll be your coach for 12 weeks. And in that time, you're going to try and make the greatest progress you can make from your before picture to your after picture. And at the end of the contest, which will be April 13th, it's going to start on January 20th. It'll go to April 13th, 12 weeks. By April 13th, we're going to figure out who wins the contest. And we're going to have some prizes. First of all, Old School Labs is sending a bottle of Vintage Burn to the first 10 people that sign up. So if you get in there quick and get signed up, you might get a free bottle of Vintage Burn. But the prizes at the end of the contest after 12 weeks, first place is going to get $200 in supplements from Old School Labs. They'll also get a copy of each one of my books, the Bodybuilding Heroes and Legends Volume 1, the MP6 Workout, and Diary of a Natural Bodybuilder. You'll also get both of my DVDs, which is the Real Muscle DVD and the Natural Bodybuilding Seminar and Competitions DVD. And as an extra treat, you're going to get interviewed by me. And I'm going to interview you on Skype, and we're going to find out what you did, how you accomplished your goal of winning this contest, and your diet and your training. We'll go over everything and what your reason was for competing in the show. And then I'm going to post the interview on YouTube, and it's also going to be up on the johnhansenfitness.com website. If you get second place in the show, you'll get $100 in supplements from Old School Labs. You'll get a copy of my MP6 workout and the Diary of a Natural Bodybuilder, and you'll get a copy of the Real Muscle DVD. And then third place will get $75 in supplements from Old School Labs, a copy of my MP6 workout, and a copy of the Real Muscle DVD. So got some great prizes. You guys should really do this if you're trying to get in shape for the new year. I know I myself am out of shape. My weight is up. My waist is up. I got too much fat. So I'm going to do this along with you guys and try and diet down and get ripped by April 13th. So yeah, you got nothing to lose. You're going to be in great shape and you'll get coaching from me for 12 weeks where normally that's a 4-week price. So it's a great deal all over. Please tell your friends about it. Many people in this contest as possible. Just go to johnhansonfitness.com, click on the fitness challenge on the top of the page and you'll see all the details. And then I'll just send you a questionnaire. You fill that out and I will have your new training and diet program for you for the next 3 months. I also want to mention, of course, my seminar, which is coming up on March 21st and 22nd out here in Tampa, Florida. It'll be at the Powerhouse Gym Athletic Club where I train. And we are going to go over, it's going to be a massive 2-day bodybuilding seminar covering everything I've learned in my 40 years of training. So this seminar will be half classroom and half in the gym training. So the first part of the day, which will go from about 9 to 3, we are going to go through the classroom training where I will talk about everything with training and diet and nutrition. I've actually got the whole breakdown of exactly what I'm going to be talking about in the seminar on my website, johnhansonfitness.com. So basically, we're going to talk about genetics, how you can assess your physique, different mental strategies you can use, what actually makes a muscle grow. We're going to talk about training intensity versus volume, different ways you can make gains in your training, such as more weight, more reps. We'll talk about periodization training for strength and for hypertrophy. We'll talk about how to set up a training program, how many sets you should do, how many exercises you should do. We're just going to go over everything. We're going to talk about how to overcome weak body parts in every muscle group. And then we'll talk, of course, about nutrition, how to put a diet together, how to overcome diet plateaus, how to stay big as you get ripped, what type of food you should eat, how much cardio you should do, everything. Everything I know, guys, is going to go into the seminar. So it's going to be a really, really intensive seminar. And then the second part of the day from like 4 to 7, we're going to go into the gym and we're going to train chest, shoulders, triceps, and calves on the first day and legs, back, biceps, and forearms on the second day. And I will tell you guys what exercise to do. I will demonstrate each one. I will have everybody do it. So it's going to be a really, really great seminar. So this is going to be, again, on March 21st, 22nd, Tampa, Florida. It's a $595 to go to the seminar, but if you sign up before February 1st, it's only $495. You'll save $100 if you sign up before February 1st. So hope to see you guys there. It's going to be a great, great seminar. Well, I also want to mention I was on Dave Palumbo's show this week. We did a show about Sergio versus Arnold. I talked about all the Sergio and Arnold battles, a little bit of history for RX Muscle. So if you go to RX Muscle on YouTube, you can check that interview out. Got a lot of views. I think it's got like 20,000, I think 24,000 already in like 4 days. So a lot of people really liked it. So check that out on YouTube at rxmuscle.com. And hopefully Dave will have me on there again. He helped me promote my online coaching, which is I have all those programs now available on johnhansonfitness.com. Before, I used to do just a training and diet consultation, but now I'm offering all different types of programs, including a 1-year program. You can sign up for 1 year of coaching with me. If you want to compete in a contest, I also have that available. If you just want to lose fat and get ripped, I have that available. So go check that out under programs at johnhansonfitness.com. All right.
I also want to mention our other sponsor, who is Florida Alternative Medicine, where age is just a number. If you guys want to feel great, optimize your energy levels, burn fat, and balance your hormone levels to maximize your potential, then go see the experts at Florida Alternative Medicine and Weight Loss. They have a certified and knowledgeable staff that will work with you to achieve your goals and get you the results you've been looking for. They offer a wide range of services that ensure you will not only look and feel amazing, but also be comfortable knowing that they're there for you every step of the way. Their competitive pricing, along with their quality products and services, are just a few reasons to give them a call. So call them at their office number out here in Tampa, Florida, 813-922-8939. Or you can go to their website at flalternativemeds.com. Or again, their number is 813-922-8939. Mention that you heard their advertisement on the Bodybuilding Legends podcast, and you will get a free consultation. Plus, you will get 20% off your order.
All right, let's get to the show before I lose my voice. All right, so on this first clip, we are going back to the 1966 Mr. Olympia contest. This was from season 6, episode 3. And in this clip, Jerry talks about meeting Frank Zane for the very first time when he was only a teenager. Here we go.
And then Frank Zane won the medium class.
Oh, yeah, Frank Zane. In fact, let me see, was it that same year? It was either that year or the year before is where I met Frank Zane, because I competed in a contest also held at the Brooklyn Academy. It was called the Mr. Eastern American, Teenage Eastern America. I was in the Teenage Eastern America, and Frank Zane, who was unknown in bodybuilding at that time, nobody had ever heard of him. He's still living in Pennsylvania. He was in the Mr. Eastern America.
Okay.
And, you know, in those days when the contest started, everybody would stand on stage and they'd open the curtain, you know, and you just everybody would be on stage. In fact, you could see photos of the America that year that we're talking about. You'll see that when the photos of all of them standing on stage, and when Dave Draper was posing, you see all the competitors in the background.
Right.
I was standing next to Frank Zane, and you know, I don't know if the bodybuilders still do it, but in those days we used to put on baby oil on our bodies to make this idea that it would make us look more defined or something like that. I never really knew the reason for that. But you know, I was a kid. I was 15 years old, something like that. I put on too much baby oil, so it was literally dripping off me. You know? And Frank Zane was standing next to me, and he says, "You mind if I take some of that oil and put it on me?" so he took off my back and my shoulder, and he put it on himself. and you know, as he's doing this, I'm looking at the guy, and I'm thinking, "Wow, this guy's got a physique." And
really?
I was corresponding with Bill Pearl at the time, you know, and I remember writing Bill Pearl a letter, and I said to Bill Pearl, I said, "Watch out for this guy, Frank Zane. I think he's going to be a top physique." And sure enough, Frank did go on to win, if I remember correctly. He won the Mr. Eastern America that night. I didn't fare as well. I got something like second or third in the teenage event. I didn't win.
Yeah. Wow. Yeah. What year was that, Jerry?
That was, I think, 65.
65. Okay. So the year before this, then. Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah, when I look at pictures of Frank from those years, he had the symmetry. He had the same great physique. He just didn't look as ripped as he was at the Olympia later on, you know?
Right, exactly right. He just wasn't as ripped, but he had the small waist, the small hips.
Yeah.
I mean, and a good poser, I remember. I mean, you know, the early Frank Zane was always an introvert. And I remember trying to engage him in some conversation at that contest, and, you know, he clearly didn't want to talk. It wasn't that he was unfriendly. It's just that he seemed like, you know, he more or less was saying, "I'm focused on, you know, my posing. I'd rather not, you know, get any, you know," and it was one of those things.
Yeah,
I didn't take it personally. I understood, you know. As I got to know Frank Zane years later, I realized he was basically an introverted personality. You know, he wasn't, you know, wasn't that social in his early years. As he's gotten older, though, he's become much more social. Even to this day, though, he still is kind of mostly introvert. I mean, he has a Facebook page, but he doesn't really participate, that kind of thing, you know.
Yeah.
So, but that's just his personality. You can't fault him for that, you know.
He's always been sort of the opposite of Arnold.
Exactly. That's right.
All right. In this clip from the same show, Jerry talks about talking to Harold Poole backstage. Now, Harold Poole was a very close second place to Larry Scott at the 1966 Mr. Olympia. So he talks about Harold Poole for a little bit, and then he goes into Larry Scott, and he talks about the unbelievable applause that Larry got when he came out to pose.
Again, I mean, I was a young kid at Mitzi. I was only 14 years old. Howard was so friendly, so warm. He spoke with a bit of a – he had a stutter when he spoke. But just the sweetest, nicest guy. I still remember how nice he was to me. There was an incident that – I almost hesitate to say this, you know, but I got to say it anyway. At that 1966 – remember, I knew Harold Poole. I was a friend of his.
Okay.
I was standing backstage after the contest – I was standing with Harold Poole, and I don't know if you remember this guy. There was a guy from New Jersey who was a good friend of Harold Poole. His name was Mike Jubillo. This guy was about 6'3", and he had his arms. He used to wear, like, big sweaters. His shoulders, his arms were just gigantic. He was so big that he made Sergio look like a baby.
Wow.
This guy looked like he was rumored to have 23-inch arms, and I'm not kidding.
Wow, no kidding.
This guy was gigantic. I was standing backstage with Mike Jubillo, who I didn't really know very well, but I knew Harold, and we were just standing there. Larry Scott had just beaten, Harold at the Olympia, and I was standing there with these two guys, and a kid came up to Harold and asked for an autograph, and Harold readily signed, you know, and the kid said thanks and walked away. Larry Scott saw this, comes up to me, Jabillo, and Harold Poole, bends over, and you know, like he sticks his behind out, and says to Harold, "Harold, sign this."
Wow.
And Harold was such a sweet guy that he just laughed. But yeah. Mike Jabillo was, again, from New Jersey. He was a tough guy type. He was a bouncer, as a matter of fact. And he started to go towards Larry. He was going to break Larry's skin. No, people don't know this. Larry Scott almost lost his life that night. And he, I don't think he even knows it himself.
Wow.
But this guy was going to go and beat the shit out of Larry Scott right there. But Harold stopped him. You know, he says, "Don't worry about it. It's okay. Larry's a nice guy. He's just joking around." You know, and he calmed Mike Jabillo down, and nothing happened. But I'll never forget that. And I remember looking at this guy. I don't think a freaking Sherman tank could have stopped this guy, Mike Jabillo. He was just gigantic, and you know, God knows what this. He had these huge hands. Mm-hmm. One punch, and then that would have been the end of Larry Scott's life. So Larry Scott had no idea. Yeah, you know, Larry, I got to know Larry later on, I don't want to give the wrong impression. Mm-hmm. Larry was a little bit arrogant in those days. You know, he knew he was the king of bodybuilding.
Right.
You know, when you get to know Larry, he was a very nice guy. You know, I don't want to create the wrong impression. Larry, especially as he got older, he mellowed out more or less, and he's a super nice guy. I mean, I'm so sorry that he passed away, sadly, from the Alzheimer's disease, you know.
Yeah.
So, you know, it was just like Larry just meant it as a joke. It wasn't meant, you know, to put Harold down. That's the way Larry was in those days, a little bit of a joker, you know. But that was an incident that happened. But you know, Harold Poole's physique, I can tell you, was fantastic. He was actually much bigger than Larry. You know, mm-hmm. he was muscular. He was harder than Larry. But unfortunately, Larry had the aura. He had the, you know, he had the momentum, let's say. He had already won it the year before. And, you know, it was an uphill battle for Harold, you know. And quite frankly, even though you could say I'm not objective, I'll say it anyway, I felt, and I still remember after the contest commenting on this, I felt that it could have gone either way. In other words, if you judged, what I'm trying to say, John, if you judge purely by physique, mm-hmm. I would have, honestly, I mean, again, accuse me of being non-objective, I you know, but I felt that Harold should have won that night because he was in harder shape, he had more body parts. Larry basically had shoulders and arms, and that's it. I mean, he had no back development. Larry, you know, Harold had good back development. Harold had much better abs. Mm-hmm. Harold had much better legs. You know, Larry had the shoulder. Harold's shoulders were comparable to Larry's, but Larry had him on the arms. But you know, it was Larry's aura and I don't know how to put it, his mystique that won the show. I mean, there was just no way anybody on earth could have beaten Larry Scott that night. And then the thing I remember about Larry, you know, I know you're going to ask me about him, but the thing I'll always remember, and I've talked about this with Larry himself, I'll never forget the reception that Larry Scott got when they announced, you know, the other guys had already posed, you know, Sergio and, you know, Chuck and
Chuck.
And here's and Harold. And then, you know, they announce, and from Studio City, California, Larry Scott. And the audience went berserk. Everybody stood on their feet. What I didn't know was there was a young Lou Ferrigno in the audience, too, that night. He told me later on. Everybody stood on their feet and was screaming and yelling. And you know, 5 minutes go by. 8 minutes go by. And we're all still screaming, Larry, no Larry, way. Larry. And there's no Larry. After about maybe 12 minutes, suddenly, from the left side of the stage, the first glimpse you had was the lights on this platinum blonde hair. It looked platinum, not blonde, platinum. Slowly, step by step, here comes Larry Scott. As soon as he appeared, it was like pandemonium. I mean, the screaming went on. And if I remember correctly, it went on throughout his pose. Every pose he did, it reached a crescendo, just screaming. Larry, I mean, I mean, it was like, this went on, John, believe it or not, for 20 minutes.
Holy
from the
shit.
Time they announced his name all the way through his posing, 20 minutes. And I remember in a telephone conversation years later with Larry, I said, Larry, you know, one thing I'll never forget was that reception you got at the 66 Olympia?
Right.
I said, do you remember? He says, she said, I sure do remember that. He says, believe me, I was as surprised as everybody else. He says, I couldn't believe it myself. He goes, you know, I mean, it was just absolutely tremendous. And, you know, he posed, I mean, he did all those, his posing routine, the twisting shot. Every time he flexed those famous arms, oh, my God, the audience went absolutely berserk. And, you know, and then, of course, you know, the rest, they announced him as the winner. Mm-hmm. And that's when he announced his retirement. He went to the podium, but
right.
You know, the year before, which I wasn't at, they put this kind of crown on his head,
yeah, like the Marjorie crown.
Yeah, and I don't think they did it the second year. I don't remember them putting a crown at the 67.
Because yeah, I think they just gave him that plate with the $1,000.
Yeah, they gave him a plate with some fake money on it, if I remember correctly.
Right.
But I remember him. Telling me that when they put that crown, he said exactly what you just said. He said, I thought I was in a margarine commercial, you know,
right.
when he put that silly-looking crown on his head, you know. You know,
so it sounds like he had a bit of a showman in him, like holding off till he came out.
I think that's what he did. You know, I should have asked him about that.
Yeah.
But I mean, I'll never forget it. I'm thinking, where is this guy? I mean, like 10 minutes go by before he walked, and he walked so slowly across the stage every step. I mean, there was a famous bodybuilder in that same show that year. Might have been Rock Stonewall, I think. I can't remember who it was, who had that same thing. It took him like 8 minutes to get from the side of the stage to the posing dais. He walked so slowly. But in his case, the audience got pissed off because
right.
he wasn't Larry Scott. See,
right.
they'll accept that from Larry Scott, but not from this guy.
Right.
You know, the Brooklyn audience, you know, they didn't hold anything back. They'd be, hey, move your ass!
Yeah.
What are you trying to do? Get on the podium! You know, they were yelling out. They were annoyed at this guy. But when Larry Scott did it, they loved it.
Yeah.
It's amazing, you know? I still remember that.
I've had so many people on the show, and we talk about the old days, and we talk about how exciting it was and the atmosphere and how loud the crowds were, and it's hard to explain it to today's, you know, the younger kids today, because it's just not the same. But it was crazy back then, right?
Well, nothing comparable today to then.
Yeah.
Nothing comparable. But, you know, I think of it, a lot of it has to do with, again, the fact that there was no internet. There
right.
was nothing.
Right.
There was no YouTube video. I mean, you know, all we saw was the magazines, and just the sheer excitement of seeing these guys in person was just absolutely incredible to us. And, in fact, there was an incident backstage. This is, again, something that never got in the not backstage, but after the show, there was a funny incident that happened. I can tell you that I don't believe this was ever written up in the magazine. What happened was these guys, all of them, you know, were such stars to the fans that after the show, they all gathered at the side of the Brooklyn Academy of Music, the stage door entrance. There must have been about 300 people standing in the street waiting for the bodybuilders to come out through the door. I mean, there's a scene in Pumping Iron where you can see Arnold walking in through that same door where he's carrying that, you know, that painting of him.
Right.
You know, that was, he was going for that same door. That was the same door he's heading
for.
Oh,
really?
That was the stage door entrance. So after the 66 show, there was about 300 fans in the street waiting for the bodybuilders to come out. And I remember, you know, Dave Draper, they mobbed Dave Draper when he came out. Oh, you know, they were all over him. Dave, you know, and Dave was a good sport about it, you know.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and, you know, then the California guys got Gabe Boudreaux and, you know, Dono, all these guys came out. And, you know, they all got the same reception. And, again, and finally, who comes out? There's Joe Weider comes out with Larry Scott, right?
Mm-hmm.
And the audience went berserk. And, you know, I was standing there. And I still remember fearing for Larry Scott's life.
Wow.
Because they were literally jumping on him and tearing at his clothes.
Jesus, really?
Joe
wow.
And it was hilarious because Joe Weider was trying to use his body to shield Larry Scott. I mean, imagine Joe in this suit was like,
yeah.
He had his arms wrapped around Larry Scott trying to pull him away from these rabid fans. Finally, you know, what they did is Joe Weider. I wish they could have. This would have been a great video. Too bad they didn't have the video. Joe Weider and Larry Scott break off in a run down the street with the fans and hotly in pursuit. I mean, it was hilarious to see. Luckily, nobody got hurt. But right. I'll never forget that, the sight of seeing Joe Weider and Larry Scott running down the street with all the fans running after him. They didn't want to hurt. They just love Larry Scott.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, it's not that they wanted to hurt him or beat him. No, no,
right,
no.
It was like the Beatles, was, you know.
I mean, I hate to compare, but Larry Scott was like God to them. These people worshipped him. I remember when Joe was holding on to Larry Scott, I remember one of the fans said, "Hey, Joe, are your magazines true?" And Joe says, "Oh, yeah, absolutely, every word." And the kid says, "You're full of shit, Joe." I still remember that. It was hilarious. That was those were good times back then, I'll tell you.
Yeah.
And what happened was, by the way, in case you're wondering, Joe flagged a cab, and him and Larry jumped in, and they got away from the fans, so nobody was hurt.
All right, now we're going to hear from Phil Williams. Phil's one of my favorite guests, and Phil trained at George Turner's Gym out in Kansas City, Missouri, and George, of course, was one of those crazy gym owners from the old school days, and Phil had some great stories about him, and in this clip, he's going to tell us a couple of stories.
I made the mistake of going to George's. Contacting George, I wanted a good gym to train in that was adequate, right? I didn't have money to come back out to Venice because I'm coming back from Sweden. So I contacted George. George was, "Oh, come on, buddy, da da da." You know, George is great in a way until you get there. And, you know, once you're around him, it's a whole different world.
Right.
And I'll tell you a real funny story. And I can't remember what year this is, but you'll laugh at this. His son played football in middle school, right? His name was Maddie. Maddie collapsed on the football field, right?
Mm-hmm.
And they found out, took him to the hospital, ambulance, that he had some type of a heart issue, right? And he had to have this operation, this heart operation. And George was beside himself, right?
Mm-hmm.
And this is a funny story. So we said, "How's Maddie, George?" George is in tears. He's crying like a baby, right?
Wow.
So George, how can I say this? George is born again. He becomes born again, right?
Okay. Mm-hmm.
He doesn't want any profanity in the gym, which is, that's all George knew was four-letter words and two-syllable words, right?
Right.
And then he carried his Bible around. This is for about a month, right? That this kid was at, you know, maybe in intensive care and having a surgery and recovery and all this were.
Okay.
All this was taking place. So this is during a period of about 4 weeks. And we had a prayer circle one night in the gym, which was real weird, right? And we're all praying for Maddie. And George is crying, tears rolling down his eyes. And we feel like, oh, my God. Anyway, Maddie pulls through, right?
Okay.
He's, you know, out of the intensive care. He's going to make it, right? George, "Hey, that fucking cocksucker son of mine, did you see that motherfucker? You see how on?" And we're going, George, no profanity. But no profanity. No profanity, George. What happened? What happened? No cursing, George. You can ask this who's this if you ever know him. George said, "Hey, guys, fuck that. I don't give a fuck. I didn't say that. I didn't say any of that. Hey, get out of here. I was like, get to work."
Oh, my God.
This is a true story. True story. So I go to George, and I'm getting ready for the 87 Night of the Champions. Right? No. I would say the 87 Night of the Champions.
Okay.
So being around George was hard. I started getting ready for the show and kind of found out it wasn't going to work out. So I put it off. You know, back then you didn't have as many pro shows as you have now, right?
Right.
So you sort of had time to plan. You had maybe 5 pro shows a year in this country. I think it was the Niagara Falls, maybe the Night of the Champions. You didn't have the Chicago Pro then. I think you might have had Arnold with the Pro World Championships, he called it, before it went to the Arnold Classic, right?
Yeah, it was.
And then Mike Glass used to put on the USA Championships in California out here, Pro Championships. That was a pro show that Mike Glass put on. So there are about 4 pro shows a year. So I'm trying to pick a show and get myself in a situation where I can train without stress, at least 6 months of stress-free training where I can focus on what I need to do.
Okay.
And so I ended up, me and George ended up having a clash. George got stupid, and then, you know, he caught me on a low-carb diet, and I got stupid with him, right?
Right.
And so on the phone, we agreed to meet at the gym, and we were going to have a fist fight.
Wow, really?
No joke. And George said, hey, I'll kick your ass. I'm not 17 anymore, George. I said, I'll kill you. I was 27 at the time, right?
Right.
6 years after all that, when he used to talk to me, I talked to us like we were idiots.
Right,
I was so mad. I remember seeing red. And I drove from my apartment to the gym, and I see George in the front of his gym, right, behind the window or behind the glass.
Right.
And I said, let's get it on. And I run to the door, and I went to grab the door, and he locked it. And I went to grab it, and I said, open it. His eyes got real big, so I'm not opening it. I'm not letting you in. I'm not letting you in. And I punched the door, right? I punched the second time. And I said, open it. And George just kept stepping back. He said, I'm going to call the police. And I thought, I caught myself and I said, get out of here, Phil.
Yeah.
And you know what? That was the last time we talked. That was the last time
really?
We talked to each other.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow. All right, this is also from the same episode with Phil. He was talking about some of the people that he knew out at Gold's Gym when he was training out there. So this is a story about Ray Mensur, Mike Mensur's brother.
I'll tell you a funny story about Ray. Now that I'm thinking about it, we went to Westwood, right? My first wife, Ray, myself, I think it was just the three of us.
Mm-hmm.
And we went into a club, and we all sat there. I think we were drinking wine, and the guy said, it's ready to close, right? And so we start getting up, and Ray just sits there. Ray says, well, I'm going to finish this. And the doorman come over to him, and they knew who he was because it was a place that he recommended that we went. Oh, Mr. Mensur, we have to have you drink up, sir. And Ray just stood there and looked at him and said, I'll take my time. And so we're getting out of there, right? And they're begging Ray to leave, more or less, just, oh, please, Mr. Mensur, we got to get you out of here. And Ray's in a moody. Right. Well, the funny story is he broke up with Rachel McClish soon before this. Right. So he's in a real bad mood.
Yeah.
And so we finally get him out of the place, talk him into it. Come on, Ray, let's go, buddy. Let's just get out of here. These guys want to shut down. We get on the street and we go to cross the street and he jaywalks.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And the police turn on a light. This is in Westwood, of course. The streets are fairly busy. People are leaving the clubs and whatever. Turn the lights on him, and he just looks at him and tells him, what the fuck are you looking at? And continues to walk on. No one said it. They didn't say a thing to him. So Ray was – I got to know Ray pretty well. Ray was – boy, he was going through that. He was not the nicest guy you wanted to be around. He wasn't like he wasn't a bad person. He was just moody.
Yeah, yeah.
Extremely moody. And I guess him and Rachel McClish had been together for a while.
Yeah,
that ended. Yeah, that didn't go down well with Tim.
Well, I would have been in a bad mood too if I would have broke up with Rachel McClish. I would have been moody for about a year.
All right, we got one more clip from the Phil Williams interview. I asked Phil which bodybuilders that he saw during his time in California at Gold's Gym really freaked him out. Which guys really, really impressed him? So this is what he told me.
I saw Gunnar right before he went to the World Championships.
Okay.
And we were at Ed Connor's, in the back of Ed Connor's house, and he took off his shirt and he had on some shorts.
Mm-hmm.
And he started posing. And at that point, he was in great shape. I mean, unbelievable shape. He was very impressive. I saw Samir. I was in Samir's apartment once in the Marina Del Rey.
Okay.
And I had to be before one of the Olympias. And he was just, I mean, his lines... His separation was so deep, you could take a coin and you could roll it down the lines that were separation in his thigh.
Yeah.
It was that deep.
Yeah.
I mean, just crazy. crazy yeah. conditioning. His biceps were split so deep you could put your finger between the splits.
Wow, unbelievable.
Yeah, I mean, and intercostal, serratus. I mean, the striations in his chest were just crazy.
Yeah. Was that 82 or 83?
That comes back to mind. I'm sorry?
When you saw Samir, was that 82 or 83?
It was probably 82 or 3. I was going to say maybe 82 or 3. It had to be, yeah.
Yeah.
And it was crazy. Actually, I'm going to say it was 82 because I was still in California. When he won the 83 Olympia, I was living in Sweden. So it was in 82.
Okay. Yeah, that was the year he came in a little bit later, but he was super shredded.
Super shredded, yeah.
Yeah. What year was that when you saw Gunnar? Was that 81 or 82?
That was in 82. He was going to the World Championships. He took second to Haney that year in Belgium.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yep.
Yeah. Yeah. And I'm thinking, God, if Haney beat him, he must have really improved.
Yeah, right.
Gunnar was a funny guy. I'll tell you a funny Gunnar Rospo story.
Okay.
We're coming out of a nightclub in Norway. This is a very true story. And it's freezing outside. There's snow everywhere, right?
Mm-hmm.
People would take the bus there. Public transportation, right? There was a group of people waiting for the bus.
Yeah.
Gunnar said, he tapped me on the shoulder. He said, watch this. He had a cigarette in his hand, finished smoking a cigarette. He ran full speed toward the crowd of people and knocked everybody down like bowling pins. And he laughed his ass off after he did. He fell and laughed. I laughed so hard.
That's hilarious.
I kid you not. Yeah.
Oh my God! How big was he back then? Like 250?
That's crazy. There's stories. I think back. I mean, that'll be some that I'll think about after we finish the phone conversation. Of course.
Right.
But that was just crazy.
All right. Now we go over to season 7, episode 9. We were talking to John DeFendis, and John DeFendis was the 1988 USA champion. And John had a long career. He started out as a teenager. And he was training under Steve Mihalik. Steve was the 1972 Mr. America winner, and he was renowned for his training intensity. They called it intensity or insanity, because he would take every set to failure with forced reps, negatives, and everything. But they would do normally 50, 60, sometimes 70 sets per body part. It was absolutely crazy training. So in this clip, John talks about training with Steve when he was getting ready for a contest.
To the Mets, and I won the overall teenage Mr. New York, the Metropolitan New York, and the Mr. the men's, which to this day it's I hold the record on that. And nobody,
oh really?
No teenage, uh-huh. Yeah, no teenagers ever won that show because it's a very tough show. But no teenagers ever won the teenage in the open. And you know, Dave took second, Mike Torsha took third, and it was a big victory. That was probably the greatest night of my life, even considering the USA, because
wow.
That was the first major win that really put me on the board, you know?
Yeah. Yeah.
And then from there, you know, I won the Eastern America, the Western America, the Northeastern America. I had 19 titles before I got to the USA, but, the USA, the first USA I competed in, I was 21, just turned 21, or just shy of my 21st birthday, actually. And I was training for that with Steve, and I was in great shape.
That was in 79, Joe?
That was in 79. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I was in great shape getting ready for that. And I managed my brother's deli. So I train in the morning, go to the deli, work the deli all day, and then train again at night. While I was getting ready for that show, I was sitting in front of the salads in the deli case, and I was sitting there staring at the salads. And I guess, I don't know what happened, but man, I grabbed a spoon and I grabbed a spoonful of the rice pudding, you know?
Yeah.
And then, Steve had called me to tell me what time the workout was tomorrow. And I said, oh man, I did something really bad. You're not going to believe this. He said, what? I had a spoonful of rice pudding. You know, I'd never cheated on my diet before that.
Right. Just one spoonful.
And, a spoonful of rice pudding. And then, so he hung up the phone on me and, I tried to call him back. He was at the gym. I tried to call him. I couldn't get him. Waited a little bit. I called his house. Thomasina, his wife, said he wasn't there. Mm-hmm. And then I called a little while later, and she said, John, what did you do? And I said, what do you mean? She goes, Steve's in the driveway, and he is pissed. He's so mad. He ain't getting out of his car. He just said, DeFendis, I'm going to kill him. You know? And if Steve said he's going to kill you, you actually have to be worried, you know? So finally, I kept calling. Finally, Thomasina said, he's here. He don't want to talk to us. I really need to talk to him. So finally, I kept calling it because I knew I was in trouble. So he got on the phone. He said, you be at the gym tomorrow at 7 o'clock. Don't be a minute late, and you better be ready. And so he hung up the phone, and I was like, oh, okay. So here's what happened. Basically, the way the body parts were broken up or the way we trained back then was crazy. It was, looking back, we did chest. Basically, we would do chest and shoulders in the morning and back at night on Monday. Okay. Tuesday was arms in the morning and legs at night. Wednesday was chest and shoulders in the morning, back at night. Thursday, so it was six days on, every body part three times a day. So you gotta remember, we go in the morning, we do six days
in a row, and then two workouts a day.
It was 40 to 60 sets of body part, minimum 40, most of the time 60. I have my books back from back then. It's mind-boggling looking at them. But a minimum of 40 to 60 set body parts, and I'm talking about hard and heavy, not,
right.
I laugh when people say, well, anybody can lift light weights and do 60 sets. It wasn't like that at all. I mean, my peak, I was warming up with 315 for sets of 30 on the incline. I mean, my strength was incredible, and it was from all those years of training hard.
Mm-hmm.
And so we do 40 to 60 sets for chest, then 40 to 60 sets for shoulders, and then come back 7-8 hours later and hit it again, with back, and then you train it 6 days in a row. And then Sunday was incidentals. Okay. So we come in Sunday.
Jeez, so no days off.
Abs, calves, and forearms on Sunday,
Right.
And every once in a blue moon, he'd say, we're taking tomorrow off. And whatever he said, I'm all for that, I was just trying to survive. My goal was to survive. But so the day after I ate that spoon of rice pudding, I went in there and we started with arms, and we did, and I have it written down in a book here,
mm-hmm.
90 sets of biceps, 90 sets of triceps. And then when we were done with that,
sets.
I was wiped. I mean, I was literally like at the point where, and then I was like, we finished this last set here. And, so I'm pushing myself to the last set. I put it down. He says, okay. And all of a sudden I turn around and he's doing 12 leg extensions. And I'm like, what are you doing? We're doing legs. And basically what it was he was torturing me for the rice pudding,
Yeah.
And we did 90 sets of legs. And in my book, it says 7 o'clock biceps, 90 sets, triceps, 90 sets, legs, 90 sets. And my first meal was at 2 o'clock in the afternoon.
Oh, my God. Right? Unbelievable.
I mean, and when I look at that, and then so I went from training from 7 o'clock in the morning that day till probably 1 o'clock because, by the time I got home to eat, 2 o'clock was the meal. And I sat there over my food, and I remember I even remember the meal. It was the lean ground beef from the London Broil,
mm-hmm.
Top Round.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember eating the food, and I put red wine vinegar on it, and that was my seasoning. It was red wine vinegar on my beef, and as I ate that meal, my head was just kind of just bobbing, and I was just really lifeless, And my mother said, you don't look good, And I said, I'm fine. And literally it just kept getting worse. So she took me to the hospital, and it ended up, I literally had my potassium levels were very, very low at a dangerous level. And it was really from, whatever it was, 7 hours, however many hours we had trained that day,
Mm-hmm.
And they admitted me to the hospital, and I was in the hospital for a couple of days where I had to get my fluids balanced and get everything. I mean, but it wasn't just a matter of building a physique. It was a matter of lessons, a lot of lessons, I mean, it was, a brutal mentality, by today's standards. It would be abuse, it would be considered abuse. I mean, people say to me, I've had people tell me, well, what he did to you was abuse you. And, cause I'll say, when I'll talk about somebody else's kids, hey, when I grew up, this is what I went through. Well, you were abused. I go, you could call it whatever you want, but it's what created who I am today. It's what made me the man I am today. The person that doesn't want to give up, that's going to go for it, and it's going to believe in yourself because, you know, the end result, it worked out.
All right, we got one more clip from John DeFendis. This was a famous story about John and Steve at the beach and what Steve did to him. You may have heard the story before, but John explains it firsthand what happened. Here we go.
So I knew this was my shot. And, you know, I look back and I tell people, don't blow your opportunity. You know, too many people, you know, too many people are looking for the opportunity while they're in the middle of it, you know, and they don't recognize the opportunity. Well, I knew this. I knew this man was a great champion that literally like worked his ass off to become Mr. America.
Yeah.
And I knew he was teaching me what it was going to take to be Mr. America. And then, of course, you know, everyone knows the story, and the story's been stole from me by this guy on the internet, this motivational speaker, which makes me sick when I seen it on the on his thing. He's got millions of likes on it and all this
stuff.
Really? But really, yeah, it's you know, the beach story. I mean,
yeah,
and most people know. Yeah, most people know the beach story. It was, you know, while I was getting ready for the USA, you know, I remember we just finished a workout and just finished. It was a leg workout. We came out and Steve had a Corvette and we were getting in his car. We were going to go to the beach to get some sun. And as I was, you know, I was getting ready for that. And he was getting ready for a show. I forget which show it was. I think it was the Best in the World with Samir. He didn't go in, but Samir won that in 79. And I was getting ready for the USA that year. And we were in the car and Steve never really spoke much to me. It, like I said, it wasn't like a friendship. It was different than what most people perceive it to be.
Right.
It actually became more of a friendship later on. But, you know, after we stopped training together, when I moved to Arizona, but what happened was we're in the car and everything's quiet. And I turned to him and I said, I got to win this show. Cause I knew what I was putting into it. Everything I had, I put into it. I said, I got to win this show. What do I have to do to win? I got to win. I don't want to, I got to win. And it's in 79. And I looked at him for the answer and he looked at me and he didn't say a word. And he just drove. So I said, you know, that was Steve. He didn't say much.
Mm-hmm.
So we get to the beach. And I remember it was in the morning because we trained early. It was about 9 in the morning. And I went out to the water. We always went to the beach where there wasn't a lot of people because, you know, you're in your posing trunks and so we kind of went to a beach where there was hardly anybody there. If anybody, I don't remember. Very isolated. And I went into the water and I was about a little bit more than waist deep in the water. And I remember I was looking as the sun was kind of coming up, you know, it was kind of on an angle. And I was looking at the sun and I was saying to myself, oh my God, I remember thinking that I can't believe I got through that leg workout. It was so brutal. And, you know, so I'm standing there, I'm just looking out and I'm thinking about how relaxing I was at that moment, having finished that workout. And all of a sudden I get this whack on the back of my head and Steve grabs my hair. I had the long hair and he shoved me underwater and dumped me underwater. And I didn't know what was going on. I had no idea what was going on. And I'm swinging and, you know, hitting his legs. I remember I was punching him in the leg, trying, doing everything I can to get up. Cause I, you know, I didn't know what was going on. I had no idea. And so he pulls me up and he pulls me out of the water for a second and I managed to get a little bit of a breath and then he puts me back in the water and he's dunking me. And finally I thought I was going to die. I thought this guy has lost his mind.
Gonna drown you, yeah.
I'm going to die.
Yeah.
And he finally just kind of shoved my head away and he walked up the beach and I was, you know, I come up from the water and I'm choking and, you know, I'm trying to get my air back and I'm just dazed and I don't know what, and I remember walking out of the water screaming, what is wrong with you? What did you do? Why did you do that? And you know, I was in a panic, scared in a panic, in a frenzy kind of. And Mihalik just nonchalantly sits down and he says, son, when you were under that water, what were you thinking about? And I go, you're crazy. You're out of your mind. I'm just kind of still going off, you know?
Yeah.
And he says, I asked you a question. And he was very matter of fact. I asked you a question. What were you thinking about? I don't know what you're talking about. He said, what did you want when you were under that water? What were you thinking about when you were under that water? And I said, I was thinking about getting a breath. I was thinking about breathing, getting, why? And he said, because when you want to win as bad as you wanted a breath of air, that's when you're going to win. And, you know, the part that kills you. Later on, I found out it was, that goes back to biblical times. I forget who it was.
Mm-hmm.
But that something to that effect happened. But that was a defining moment in my life, as was the moment where I took dead last and didn't get to go out on stage, you know?
Yeah.
And I call these things defining moments, because we have these defining moments in life that make us, you know, either be great or not be great, you know, either mm-hmm. be greater and go for it. And so after that moment, every time those workouts became incredibly difficult and challenging, I would just think, how bad do I want it? I got to want it as bad as I wanted that breath. And I'd fight through it, and I'd fight through it, and I'd fight through it. And I think, you know, you're still alive. You're still living. You're breathing. You can do this, you know?
Yeah.
And it was that moment where it made me realize, you know, you do want it that bad. You've always wanted it that bad. That's why you're here. That's why you're doing what you're doing. And you're going to continue to work hard until you get that damn trophy, you know, mm-hmm. you're standing there, you know, with Joe Weider handing you that award, you know, and that's how I lived every workout, you know.
We also had a chance to talk to Joey Fulco. Joey Fulco was the 1978 Teenage Mr. USA winner. And Joey, like John, also trained with Steve Mihaylik at Mr. America's Gym in New York. So I asked Joey for some stories about Steve, and he came up with this really funny one. Here we go.
Yeah, okay, so here's the deal. He wasn't competing. He had some health issues.
Okay.
And I believe he had a car accident or something.
Yeah, I remember the car accident.
Yeah, he always said he was going to compete and get ready for something. Like he always like really believed that. I think, because they called him the Phantom, you know. And I don't think he competed above and beyond 79, 80. I think he was pretty much, he wanted to, but I don't think he really entered anything. I think one of the night of the champions he went into, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, yeah.
And you would probably know that history better than me if you looked it up. And I don't really recall what he did. I don't want to speak out of line. You know, I'm not sure. But I think it would have been a night of the champions type show.
Yeah, when I think of Steve Mihaylik, it's almost like two careers, because he won the 72 America, and then I think he went over to the NABBA Universe. And then, like you said, he had that accident where I think, didn't a garbage truck run over his car or something? And
yeah,
it like really, really messed him up. I mean, he could have died from that, I think.
Yeah, it was a pretty brutal thing, as I understand it. And so that was between the healing process and coming back.
Right,
and,
right.
And you got to remember, Steve Mihaylik was he was very hardcore, man.
Yeah, yeah.
He was a lifer, you know? He was a lifer.
So what was he like? Tell me some stories about Steve, because I had John Defendis on the show, and he told me a lot of stories. And he almost sounded, you know, like you said, he was obsessive, almost sounded crazy, you know, the way he pushed people, and he pushed himself.
Well, look, there's a lot of stuff there. There's a lot of meat on that bone, bro.
Mm-hmm.
He could be very – Steve had two sides. He could be arrogant and so self-withdrawn, and he could be mean-spirited, and then he could be the greatest guy and the most helpful guy in the world and give you the greatest advice you ever had. There was no mediocrity with Steve. And I think that, in my personal opinion, Steve was tormented by a lot of things.
Yeah.
And I don't think the steroids and anything else he was on helped to find that middle ground. You know, back then, they didn't say, you know, he's like that or bipolar. We didn't even use terminology. I'm not suggesting it was. It wasn't. I don't know. But
yeah,
he and we attribute a lot of it to, he was very serious. He didn't fuck around when you were in his gym. He was dieting a lot of the times. And quite frankly, Steve was a no-nonsense guy. He just didn't have time for bullshit.
Mm-hmm.
And if you were going to be around him, you either play by those rules or get out. It was really simple. And, you know, you talked about stories with Mihaylik real quick, and I'm sorry I got off track, but we'd be in the gym, and I have so many stories to tell you if you want to hear them, but
Sure, yeah.
There was one guy training in the gym. I think his name was, they used to call him Snake Man. You know? and we always gave people names.
Right, that's how my gym was too. Everybody had a nickname.
Yeah, everybody had a name, Snake Man. And he comes in, and the guy always had, he had his body wrapped up in all these, like, rags. He opened like a homeless guy. And he, you know, it was like he'd come in on a bicycle and he'd walk in the gym. And, you know, Steve had no tolerance for that bullshit. What are you wearing these fucking towels for? Like you just couldn't get past it.
Right.
You know, Steve kind of just like looked at him like, okay, you go over to a machine and said, all right, you're out of here. That was his big line. He said, okay, you're out of here. And literally throw the guy off the machine. He said, get out of here, you're out of here. He says, what? You're out of here. He goes, look at this fucking guy. He was talking about me. He goes, this fucking guy's training for a show. You're out of here. Get out. And he would throw him off the machine, and I would get on the machine because we were doing supersets. And we'd go to another machine. There'd be somebody else on there. Says, get off. You're out of here. And remember, these are paid members.
Right.
And he didn't, get off. You're out of here. Can't you see this man training for a show? So that's what Steve had you covered. You see what I mean?
Right.
Like, and that's just, that was the protocol, man. And you knew that. But this is a really interesting story, man. We go to the gym one day, and we're just finishing up, like, these – we're getting – there's just two parts to this story. Steve's getting ready to do squats.
Okay.
And he's loading up the bar with, you got to believe me, every bit of 700 pounds.
No way, really? He was that strong.
Yeah, and what he's doing is he's really worried about the negative force.
Okay.
He's not worried about getting up as much as he's worried about a slow way down.
Okay.
And you see what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So we have three spotters, two on each side, and I'm behind him. Steve's got his legs wrapped up. He's got his hands wrapped up. The bar is loaded up. He's right in front of the squat machine. There's a mirror, and he's getting ready. And he's got his, you know, Steve always wore those, sneakers that, I'm trying to give you a visual. Those sneakers without laces, the loafer sneakers.
Okay, okay.
He's wearing those, got his gym pants. He's huge, gets on that weight. He's only going to do like three reps. He's going to come down three times, and they're going to lift it up for him three times.
Okay.
He's in the middle of his set. In the middle of that. Now think about that scene.
Yeah.
Takes the weight off the bar. He walks back 2-3 feet. It's now on him. It's on his shoulders. And we're just waiting for him to do those three reps, four reps, and we're going to get lifted up, and he's going to go down and do it. And some kid comes up to him, some guy. He's like, hey, I have a question about about arms. I'm doing like biceps. He turns his head like as far as you could turn it from having 700 pounds of squat on you.
Oh, my God.
Like, put the bar back. Put the fucking bar back. He never did the set. He went fucking ballistic. Guy was actually asking him a question during the actual.
Yes, he's backing up with 700 pounds.
God, I'm telling you, bro. If we're writing the movie and I'm telling you this is the scene, you're saying, yeah, but that would never happen. It happened.
Right.
During his set, he's asking him questions. And listen, how are my biceps? Should I be doing like five sets? I was like insane questions during this time. Put the fucking bar back. It was insane, bro. Listen, it was really crazy.
All right, in season 7, episode 11, I got a chance to talk to Manuel Perry. Manuel Perry was one of the top amateur bodybuilders in the late 70s. He won the tall class at the 1977 Mr. America. He also won the AAU Mr. USA overall. And if he would have kept going in bodybuilding, he probably would have been a top pro. But Manny switched careers and he went into the stuntman business in the movies. And he's been doing that ever since. So he really made a good choice. But I talked to Manny about when he first went over to California and the first time he ever went to Gold's Gym.
I'm going to train hard. I'm going to go to California. I'm going to try to, you know, get out there with the big boys so I could learn as much as I possibly could about training techniques and dieting and stuff.
Yeah.
So I decided to move to California and train at Gold's Gym, the original Gold's Gym.
Yeah. How old were you, Manny, when you did that?
I was probably 23, 24.
Okay.
And when I got to California, it was like 6 o'clock in the morning, and I was trying to find Gold's Gym. I end up finding it. I knocked on the front door, opened the door. It was locked, but I could hear the weights clanging, and all the glass windows were all steamed up. You couldn't see inside, but I knew they had to get in somewhere. I went around the back. I went around the back alley. The door was open. Walked up inside, and there I remember when I walked in, there was Arnold training.
Really? Wow, that's cool.
And it was like, and he had, you know, no shirt on, just a pair of, you know, gym shorts.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
I thought I saw God.
Wow, I mean, so awesome.
There was the Austrian Oak, you know, big pecs hanging off, big back, big arms, big calves.
Wow.
Franco was in there. Dave Draper was in there. Frank Zane was in there. Robbie Robinson was in there. Denny Gable. I mean, the list goes on. And Ken Waller. It goes on and on.
Wow. Unbelievable.
I got intimidated and ran out. I'll never forget that moment ever.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
So what year was that, Manny?
That was probably 70. It was probably early on in 70. See, I won the USA in 77. That was probably 70. Yeah, maybe late 75, because we had the Mr. America bicentennial year competition in Santa Monica.
76.
It was a late 75 or early 76.
Okay. Wow. What a great story. That's awesome.
Yeah, great story.
All right, here's another clip with Manuel Perry. Manny talks about training with the great Robbie Robinson. Here we go.
Who were the guys that you hung around with at Gold's back then? Because I know Ken Sprague owned it right around that time, right?
Ken Sprague owned the gym, and Ken Sprague and his wife, Marion, were the two that encouraged me to go to Arlington, Texas to compete in the Mr. USA competition.
Okay.
I wasn't sure if I was ready myself personally, but they felt I was ready. Mm-hmm. And they talked me into it, and I said okay. So I went into a training mode, and I trained with Robbie Robinson for that competition.
Yeah. Wow.
And I trained like I had never trained before.
Uh-huh.
Robbie is an animal in the gym.
You're right.
And we did things I've never done before with supersetting and the weights we handled, the exercises, the movements, and worked, because I went to Arlington, Texas, and I won. I won the,
you won the
heavyweight division and won the overall.
Yeah. And you beat Dave Johns, who would become Dave Mr. Johns. America next year. Yeah.
Yeah, I beat Dave Johns. I beat a guy named Baldwin. I beat C.F. Smith. And a few other guys were pretty, pretty good bodybuilders, but I can't remember all of the names. I was just so nervous just at that level of competition, which I wasn't sure if I would, be able to dethrone or win the competition. And I ended up walking away with the title. So,
wow, amazing.
That was a very, very high point for me.
Like you said, you trained with Robbie, and you guys did things you never did before, supersets, heavier weights. Were you training like everybody was back then, 6 days a week, twice a day?
Probably 6 days a week. Monday morning, it was Monday, Wednesday, Friday. Start off with calves. Mm-hmm. We worked two major body parts. Monday, Wednesday, Friday, be chest and back.
Okay.
In the morning. Then we go eat, hang out at the beach, come back in the afternoon around four-ish, and do legs.
Wow.
Then Tuesday, Thursday, Saturday, start off with calves and would be shoulders and arms.
Okay.
And then we would end each session every day with abs.
Wow. How long were those workouts?
Hour and a half, 90 minutes.
Okay.
And then legs would be a separate, because it's too big of a body part to work with any other body part.
Yeah. Man, that's awesome.
And, Robbie was an animal in the gym. I mean, we would, just pound on the weights and, squat rack, front squats, back squats, hack squats, the leg press machine. I mean, stuff that I never used because I never had that equipment when I was coming up.
Yeah.
All right, and we'll finish off the anniversary show with our interview with Steve Davis. Steve Davis was the 1977 Mr. World winner. a contest he won out in Acapulco, Mexico. Steve had a physique that was very reminiscent of Frank Zane, very symmetrical, not a big guy, but had really good symmetry and real cut. And Steve had a really good career. And he talked about training with Frank Zane back in 1977. They made a movie together called Sagan, which I don't think was ever released. I don't think they ever finished it. But Steve talks about training with Frank, and this was the year that Frank won the Mr. Olympia title for the very first time.
But tell me a little bit about training with Frank in 1977, because I just did an interview with your friend Richard Baldwin, and he said when he saw Frank training in the gym, it was like he was in a zone. He was like a Zen master, and it was really amazing to see how focused he was and how concentrated he was. So what was – well, I'm sure you learned a lot from training with him that year in 1977.
His instruction – now, how did we get together? I'm pretty sure Joe Weider introduced us, and Frank was now training with Bill under the tutelage of Bill Kazmaier during the
offseason. Oh, really?
And the powerlifter. And you know,
finished
wrap up on Frank was size.
Yeah.
And so once Frank had the size, then he and I trained together. But my instructions from Frank were to – quietly, before I fell asleep, to go over my routine the next day, you know, my lifting routine, so that I would think, yeah, I'm going to turn my little fingers up with the incline curl. I'm going to make sure I touch all four dumbbells on the bench dumbbell bench press. So we went over our routine in our mind prior to going in the next day. Tennis players do that now. They go over what they're going to do prior to their exercise routine or the game or whatever. So one of the things, and so the zone, he was already mapped. He already knew what he was going to do that day in the gym the night before. Because, you know, Frank is a big time, he believes that the brain and the mind are the most important organs in the body in terms of training. They're not muscles, but, you know, think it and do it. What you think, you will become. So, there wasn't a lot of talk at all when we trained together. And secretly, I always tried to use more weight, but I don't think I always did. but no, we were dead serious and no conversation with anybody. And at Vince's or at World on Main Street, it was strictly from that point to the stage. So, you know, it wasn't a party atmosphere. There was one bathroom, no women training. It was pretty serious in both locations. And what I learned from him, forced reps. And he had his split, you know, chest, shoulders, triceps, calves, back, biceps, forearms, thighs. But maybe accurately back, biceps, forearms, come back in the afternoon and work thighs. Chest, biceps, and then come back and do abs and calves. Or twice a day. But push-pull.
Twice a day.
Push-pull, and then, of course, posing. And you know, he was a big believer in a vacuum. I wasn't that great at it, but I kind of got away with the frontal section by having decent abs. But, he was focused. He studied everything. And one thing he did very nice for me is he had a program. Every week he went to, during summer when he was off, he went to a different high school every day in the LA Unified School District and did a demonstration on
how. Oh, really?
And he handed that to me. And so I got an extra workout in all that summer, you know, doing a set with 135 bench press, bent over rows, military press. I might have even done curls with that. And so I went through a one exercise per body part routine around the LA City schools.
Oh, that's nice. Huh.
Now, when you were training with Frank that summer, did you think he was going to win the Olympia? Because I know a lot of publicity was on Robbie, and I think Lou also, because Lou was supposed to go in the show.
I don't think we cared about anybody.
Really? Yeah.
No, I don't think so. Because you, when the 77 Olympia came, if I'm not mistaken, each guy stood behind a curtain and you just saw his outline.
Silhouette. Outline. Right.
Right. Thank you, silhouette. And even with just the silhouette, you could tell that Frank was going to win.
Yeah.
The day before the 77 Olympia, he told me that he did 10 reps with 315 in the bench press, probably
really?
Weighing 185.
Wow. No kidding. That's amazing. I wouldn't think of him that being that strong, you know?
No, he was. And he was, you know, he was a power lifter and a squatter. And that's why he had a temperamental lower back. But that's why he had a wonderful lower back. You know, you don't see any shots of my back anywhere.
Right.
I was very good at hiding it, either that or the photographer thought that, get it, man. The word was out on me. But he had he had a really good lower back, and based on him being a power lifter. And, you know, I'm pretty sure Frank was from Pennsylvania, where Bob Hoffman and York were, York, PA. And so that was kind of how he got into lifting, was as a power lifter and an Olympic lifter.
All right. That's it for our anniversary clips for part one of our show. Next week, we'll be back with some more clips from the show for part two of our anniversary special. So thank you for listening to another episode of the Bodybuilding Legends podcast. Of course, I want to thank Old School Labs and Florida Alternative Medicine for sponsoring this episode of the podcast. I also want to thank all of you who are helping to support the podcast on our Patreon account. If you go to bodybuildinglegendsshow.com, look in the upper right-hand corner. There's a little button that says support us on Patreon. And I have quite a few of loyal listeners who support us by sending us money every month. So I really do appreciate that, guys. Thank you very much. All right, next week we will be back with part two of our anniversary special. I hope you guys have a great week. Take care, everybody.